the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. I am in a strange mood as I was yesterday. So I will start with a strange story as I did yesterday. In the studio here, we were having a debate right before we came on air. Philly or Pittsburgh sandwiches? First of all from the great state of Pennsylvania. I vote against fries in sandwiches. JR also voted against the skip. Our stage manager today voted in favor because he's from that area. You guys have great football teams, but the French fries is headed. But overall, I lose America points because Americans put French fries in sandwiches needlessly. And then Skip made a great point. In Pittsburgh, they put French fries on salad. You know what that is? Elbow from the sky, America.
There's a simple remedy. Order some fries, order your sandwich. If you'd like fries in the middle of your mouth while you have a sandwich, jam both. It's okay. You'll get the same effect.
I don't know. I think we're losing that one, JR. I'm just keeping it real, man. Okay, second random thing. Don't miss the show next week. Interesting. Just don't miss it. I'll leave it at that. We're going over here. Okay, who would have thought that I would be applauding a speech from George W. Bush for its bravery, for its correct description of America and its ideals? Wow, the world is topsy-turvy. So this is fascinating for a number of reasons. He never mentioned the word Donald Trump, but his speech on Thursday clearly directed against Donald Trump and in very strong words. This is a former Republican president. Listen in.
We've seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty. At times, it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together. Argument turns too easily into animosity. Disagreement escalates into dehumanization. Too often, we judge other groups by their worst examples, while judging ourselves by our best intentions. Forgetting the image of God we should see in each other. We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism. We've forgotten the dynamism that immigration has always brought to America. We see a fading confidence in the value of free markets and international trade, forgetting that conflict, instability, and poverty follow in the wake of protectionism. We've seen the return of isolationist sentiments, forgetting that American security is directly threatened by the chaos and despair of distant places where threats such as terrorism, infectious disease, criminal gangs, and drug trafficking tend to emerge. In all these ways, we need to recall and recover our own identity. Americans have great advantage. To renew our country, we only need to remember our values.
Wow, and it's about to get much tougher as well, but lots of tough words already in there. When he starts talking about bullying and how it leads to casual cruelty. Gee, I wonder who he's referring to. When he talks about isolationist sentiments, that is clearly Donald Trump. Then he said nationalism distorted into nativism. Now, this is the same language that John McCain used just a couple of days ago when talking about the movement from the 1930s that turned nativist and turned inward and against immigrants. And George Bush there talking about the dynamism immigration has always brought to America. So this is clearly broadsides against Donald Trump, but he probably won't respond on Twitter. So we'll see how that goes. No Trump response yet, but Bush has got more where that came from. And I never thought I'd miss this guy. Not in a million years did I think I'd miss him. And yes, he still looks goofy, but the words are important. And I'm super glad that he came out to give this speech. He gave the speech at the same place that Obama also gave a speech in September, also warning about the same themes, also not mentioning Donald Trump. My favorite part of the clip you just saw was when he talked about forgetting the image of God we should see in each other, saying don't be cruel to one another and don't go in a direction of bigotry. But more clear words from Bush here.
We need a renewed emphasis on civic learning in schools, and our young people need positive role models. Bullying and prejudice in our public life sets a national tone, provides permission for cruelty and bigotry, and compromises the moral education of children. The only way to pass along civic values is to first live up to them.
Damn, talking about how bullying is cruel and leads to bigotry. The same themes as McCain. Remember Corker came out and started speaking out against Donald Trump. I think there is a movement afoot here. And now understand Bush is out of office. McCain is not going to run for re-election. Neither is Corker. These are the guys who have been liberated to say things that are true and are not tied to the Republican base as much anymore, not tied to the donors as much anymore. The donors still looking forward to those giant tax cuts that Trump is promising. But there are apparently some sane voices in the Republican Party saying we have to act and perhaps act in unison. That I think is the most interesting part. But one more great clip from here from Bush. Who would have thought I would have said that sentence on the Young Turks? But anyway, here, watch.
Our identity as a nation, unlike many other nations, is not determined by geography or ethnicity, by soil or blood. Being an American involves the embrace of high ideals and civic responsibility. This means that people of every race, religion, ethnicity can be fully and equally American. It means that bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed.
Blasphemy against the American creed. God bless you, George W. Bush. Wow, wow, the world is so insane right now that Bush is the voice of reason. Bush used to be the crazy right wing. Now he's trying to calm the country down and saying, wait. Turns out it gets way crazier. And we cannot allow and encourage this kind of white supremacy. We cannot give it room. It is blasphemy against the American creed. I read the whole John McCain speech from a couple of days ago. These are very similar themes. America is not about blood and soil. It's about an idea. Look, I mean, they sound like me. I'm sure that they don't know that, don't get me wrong. But I love the American idea. I think that's what we need to defend. And for these Republicans to turn around and say that the guy in charge now, and George Bush did not come out to give a random speech about bigotry and white supremacy and how bad it is for America and nationalism and nativism out of the thin blue air. He didn't do it as a as a broadside against a random congressman. No, he is clearly, as John McCain was, talking about Donald Trump. So I wonder if there is something we don't know within Republican circles, because that's three strikes. That is three different people all singing the same tune. And it is possible that Republican leaders have looked around and said, this guy is totally unstable. And we can't say that publicly because our base will rip us apart, but we gotta go find leaders in our party who can say it publicly. So here comes Corker, here comes McCain, here comes George W. Bush, and I don't think we've seen the last of it. What little conscience the Republican Party has might be acting out here, and of course don't expect the courage of Republicans who are up for re-election to actually show up. If that does, that means Trump is already done. They're not going to say anything publicly unless they've already decided that they're done with him, and that would be a huge moment. But at least for them to send out these elders of the party and people not going to face the voters or the donors anymore, and to say that Trump is heading us towards bigotry, white supremacy, nativism, and that we should not go down that road, we should protect the idea of America, that is a giant turning point. And yes, for that I will give old adversaries, John McCain, even Bob Corker, and even George W. Bush, a world of credit. Okay, now, could you imagine if Republicans actually put patriotism and country above party? I mean, if that is the beginning, that would be the most shocking turn of events. Okay, now, let's move to the next story. Okay. Well, we've been telling you a lot about strange weather events. It's almost as if someone or a whole set of folks predicted this, maybe a whole category of profession called scientists. Well, we got hit by hurricane after hurricane. We got the droughts that led to the terrible wildfires in western United States. And now we have what is being called an atmospheric river. What in the world does that mean? Well, you're about to see. It is a 5,000 mile long belt of rain. What in the world? Let me show it to you. It stretches from China to the United States. It is a 5,000 mile belt of storms. What have we done to the planet? Jesus, man. They have these both cool and scary phrases for this. It's also called rivers in the sky because it's so long and it's obviously rain and moisture in the air and so intense that it has formed a river in the sky. Oh my God, what have we done? So now this is not the first time that we've had this. There was one back in 2009. It is not a sign of good things to come. If we start to have these more frequently and more intensely, I don't know how that it could get more intense than a 5,000 mile belt of storms, but this is picking up momentum, man. Yes, climate change makes a difference. Yes, they told you that the warm air would pick up moisture from both the ground, causing droughts and wildfires, and from the ocean, and it would create bigger storms. How's a 5,000 mile storm for you? Another thing that scientists that are tracking this call this is the big dark. Because for 5,000 miles, there's nothing but clouds in that belt. And it's the big dark. And it is headed in our direction. Well, it's already hit the state of Washington. Let me tell you about that. At least one city in Washington set a daily record for precipitation Wednesday, and Seattle was expected to have its wettest 24-hour period since February. Think about that for a second. It's not like the state of Washington isn't already wet. It's known in America as the wettest area in America. It rains all the time. We just broke a record in the state of Washington for precipitation. Gee, I wonder if there's something going on here. I wonder if the scientists were all right that we are going to have more precipitation and more storms. More from the state of Washington. Strong wind gusts knocked out power to more than 54,000 people in western Washington. And a ground delay was temporarily placed at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. According to King 5 TV, ferry services were temporarily closed as well. Look, the stories that I'm reading, I don't know if they're afraid to make the connection? Will they seem non-neutral? Do they need to have 17 scientists on the record to talk about it? But not a lot of talk of climate change. I'm not afraid to talk about it. I can see it with my own eyes. The scientists predicted that we would have massive storms. Now we have 5,000 miles of storms, the big dark. And people are wondering, oh, well, you know, that might be a shame if climate change happens later. Son, you're in climate change. You're in it right now. What more do you need? Do you need a 10,000 mile storm? We had how many hurricanes hit? Harvey, Irma, Maria. And those are the ones that just happened to hit US territories. And then the wildfires that raged for months in Montana, let alone the devastation they did in California, and now the big dark. Yes, it's climate change. Not one storm or weather pattern can be directly connected, and you say, okay, well, it rained today, it must be because of climate change. No. But overall, when you look at the macro picture and you see the intensity of these storms, it is exactly what was predicted. In fact, it is coming quicker, heavier, and much more intense than even scientists expected. If this is what we get this year, wait till you see next year. Brace for impact. Okay, now I'm gonna go to good news. Okay, so we've been telling you about this wonderful couple. They decided to do it that in their wedding, they would do a gift to Wolfpack as part of the wedding registry. Now, I'm going to tell you about how that has begun to catch on in America now, which I love. I'm also going to tell you about something that happened in Massachusetts related to Wolfpack that I think you will, that is super inspirational. Okay, so first, this is the website that you can go to donate for the wedding registry. Obviously, that goes to Wolfpack to fight to get money out of politics. Wolf-pack.com/wedding. If you don't remember, it's let me show you the pictures. It's Rebecca Chan and Justin Hayashi who did this wonderful act in what we're calling the red, white, and blue wedding. Man, that looks lovely. God bless their hearts. Those are real Americans right there. And so then we said, you know what, guys? Why don't we go further here and actually encourage others to do it? And we said, email in if you'd like to do it more together at wolf-pack.com. And guess what people did? They started emailing in and going, you know what? I'm going to do the same thing. I love this country and I love you guys. So together at wolf-pack.com, if you want to participate. And if you're doing it, by the way, you can do hashtag WolfpackWedding. And so now let me show you and more people that have begun to do it. So here is Ryan and Amanda Metropolis. And they said, we're getting married. We're going to put it in our wedding registry. Wolf-pack.com/wedding. Okay. And then Gabby and Andrew from Boston, they're doing it. And then Skip from Washington said, hey, you know what? I'm not getting married. I'm 50. I'm 50, brother. Well, you know what? I'm about to have a 50th birthday. I want people to give to Wolfpack instead of, and by the way, you also can give Skip other presents too. Okay, and all these lovely people getting married as well. But wolf-pack.com/wedding, even if you're doing birthdays or anything else along those lines, there are patriots in America. They want to get the money out, and you do it through small donors. And that's exactly what Wolfpack's doing. And so you know we're fighting in all these different states. And we've already got it passed in 5 states. What we need is 34 states to call for a convention so we can get that amendment, go around Congress so we don't need Congress. Okay? So now we're fighting in Massachusetts. That's a state we don't have yet, but I think we will. And they decided they were going to have a committee hearing. First of all, I want to give credit to the Wolfpack sponsor, Representative Carmen Gentile, who testified there. Bless his heart. There's a lot of great Americans I want to give credit to there. Also, chair of the committee, Representative John Mahoney, who was a Wolfpack co-sponsor. And guess what happened? People started showing up. And all of a sudden, there were 60 people in a committee hearing when normally committee hearings are not really lighting the place up, right? And so, you know, there's some folks testifying there that you can see. And then one of the folks that were testifying was Matt Mazzola. He is our organizing director in Massachusetts. So he's not a politician. He's not a lobbyist. He's Matt Mazzola from Massachusetts. And he went, and guess what happened? All the representatives heard from him. That's how democracy is supposed to work. I know it's amazing what it does, and it almost never does on the national level, but at the state level, a guy who actually cares and says, hey, you know what? If we have private financing of elections, they will work for private interests. Why don't we do something else? Why don't we do election reform? Why don't we get the money out? And they're like, all right, Matt, go step up to the plate. And he did. And then they did a fun meetup afterwards in Boston after the committee hearing. 40 showed up from our side. And then there was another group, We the People Massachusetts, that had another 20 folks show up. And then they all went and had a drink together. But mainly, I want to tell you about this next person. That's Erica Gewurz. There she is. And Erica has great anxiety. She has epilepsy. So she has great anxiety, and it makes her hard to participate with the team. But she cares so much about this issue, so she wanted to testify in a public hearing. It takes tremendous courage. And she wound up collapsing in front of the whole crowd. You know what she did afterwards? She got up. She got up and testified and said, I want to get the money out because I'm afraid the insurance companies are going to control the legislators. And if I lose my insurance, I could die. I don't want that. I want you guys to represent me, the voters, the public, not the people financing the elections. It's people like that, like Erica, that are going to save this country, and all the people who are doing weddings, birthdays, etc. So bless her heart. And you know, you get these inspirational stories every once in a while, and I'm amazed by them. There was the woman in New York who had a broken back and was making calls from her hospital bed. There was the person who again had incredible shyness, but had gathered up the courage for the first time to go and speak to legislators. There's somebody who was disabled and they couldn't get out, so they said, "All right, well then I'm going to make more phone calls than anybody's ever made for Wolfpack in North Carolina." So join us, wolf-pack.com/states, and that's how you volunteer. You find out you know, how you can help in your own state, whether it's Massachusetts that's happening right now, whether it's states like New Mexico and Hawaii that were so close last year, New Hampshire. There's so many of these states where we're on the edge. It is truly nonpartisan. We're getting a lot of Republicans to vote with us as well. They don't like crony capitalism. They know that you need election reform. 93% of the country agrees. That means a whole ton of Republicans and Democrats and libertarians and liberals and moderates, everyone. They say that unfortunately right now the politicians represent the donors and not the voters. And we've got to change that if we've got to bring our democracy back. So for this particular campaign, we're trying to get to $100,000 so that Wolfpack can launch the next mission. And we'll tell you about that mission, and that mission is going to be super exciting. And it's going to involve really going after some people and making sure that their voice is heard and their power is used. So wolf-pack.com/wedding. It started as a red, white, and blue wedding. For the people who are serving the big donors, it might end up in just a red wedding. Let's see how that turns out. But let's get them to $100,000. They're already over 10% of what they need to raise. Let's get them to 20, 30%. I'd love to see 20,000 by the end of the week. So wolf-pack.com/wedding. All of you guys participating in this, you inspire me. It's amazing what you guys have built. And together we're going to win. We're going to get that amendment, and we're going to get our democracy back. We'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, host Cenk Uygur, that's me. Chris Huck, he's one of our own, he's in Pittsburgh, and he says, Primanti's puts fries and coleslaw on sandwiches because they were made for truckers so they could eat a complete meal with one hand. Hashtag America. God bless Pittsburgh, man. Pittsburgh's like is such a great city. I think it's the most American city. I said it. Dances With says about Bush's speech. There's no way he wrote that, but is nice he said it out loud. Now, of course, and he can't help himself. He's still goofy, so he'll do the like and fight against bigotry. And you're like, okay, no, don't make silly faces in the middle of a good speech. Right, but I'll take it. It's a good speech. Admiral Morrison says, I'm praising George W. Bush. I feel sullied and unusual. I hear you, brother. Digital Shark says, nothing makes sense anymore. The Murphy, which is a fun name, says, Republicans know Trump will have long lasting damage to their party, can't risk future elections. When W makes sense, it's bad. You're right, they are partly doing it for future electoral victories. But once again, I'll take it. Anyone on the right side of this issue and fighting against Trump and his bigotry is a good ally to have for now. So God bless. Lynn Laura finally says about the dark, what was it? The big dark. Sharknado is starting to seem more and more plausible, but not in a funny way. More like winter comes and we all die, Game of Thrones style. Right. We almost call that story about the 5,000 mile river in the sky. River is coming. All right, speaking of what's coming, real quick notice for you guys, good folks at PCCC, that's the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, are doing a virtual town hall tonight. Check it out at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, that's 5:30 Pacific. What they're doing is they're having three great candidates, Randy Bryce, Katie Porter, and Andy Kim, progressives running for office, and you get to ask them questions, which is pretty neat. So RSVP at press@boldprogressives.org, and ask those folks some questions. Make sure that they're on your side and fighting for you, and I think they are. All right, we're over here. Does anybody even remember the movie 10 with Bo Derek in it? Okay, you're gonna see why we did this graphic. So Donald Trump is talking about very serious issues. He started talking about uranium in Russia. That's another story, and I'll cover that as well. But before we get to the serious stuff, let's have a little bit of fun. He was asked about how the federal government reacted to the hurricane recovery efforts in Puerto Rico. How did they do? Now, what would a normal president say? They'd say, look, you know, our hearts are heavy for the people who suffered in Puerto Rico, and I think we're doing the best we can, and I'm proud that we sent, you know, X amount of, you know, and you would name a number of factors, number of people we sent, trucks we spent, supplies we sent, etc. But you know, it's never enough, and we're going to keep on fighting to make sure that they deliver, right? Stuff like that. Here's what Trump said instead.
Between 1 and 10, how would you grade the White House response so far to the
hurricane? I'd say it was a 10. I'd say it was probably the most difficult. I give ourselves a 10, but we have provided so much, so fast. We had the Coast Guard waiting for the storm, just outside the storm, and following the storm in. Army, Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, helicopters that weren't even meant for this purpose. So we would have the military driving trucks. It's not even their aptitude. Didn't really know how to drive trucks, but they learned very quickly. They're smart. The gentleman who worked for Bill Clinton when he was president gave us an A+. Gave us an A+. I really believe he's correct. We have done a really great job.
The military, they don't know how to drive trucks. They don't know it, but they figured it out because that's how good Donald Trump is. 10 out of 10. And they were all around there, and the gentleman that worked for Bill Clinton gave us an A+, whose name I obviously didn't bother to remember, even though he gave us an A+. Okay, but this is not the first time that Donald Trump has given himself a 10. We found one other instance. Here it is.
I gave it a fucking ten.
We have a goofball for a president. How would I grade myself? A 10. Unfortunately, he's a dangerous goofball. Otherwise, it'd be a lot of fun. Guys, it's not a reality show. He's actually the president of the United States. God help us. Okay.
A 10.
All right, we're moving forward. This is just a Xiao Xiao story. Okay. Interesting purge going on at the DNC. Now, when Tom Perez won, he was backed by the entirety of the establishment, mainly pushed by Barack Obama. They wanted to make sure that Keith Ellison didn't win. Keith Ellison had supported Bernie Sanders, and he was a progressive, and they didn't want that. So they sent in Tom Perez, and they said, oh, yeah, no, I mean, he's done some things at Labor. He's fine, he's a good progressive, don't worry about it. And it was a hard-fought battle, and they played super dirty, and they had some terrible charges that they put out about Keith Ellison. I don't want to repeat them. Now, they never do that to Republicans, but when it was progressives, they knew how to fight dirty against progressives, obviously, if you're there because they're the Democratic establishment. Now, at the time, though, after he won, they said, oh, kumbaya, Keith Ellison is going to join as vice chair. It's okay. We got a unity reform commission. It's going to do reforms. We're going to unify. We're going to bring in some Bernie Sanders people, not as much as Hillary Clinton people. Okay, I get it. She won the primary. So whatever you do, don't worry, okay? This is all together. Hold hands. Not anymore. Now, all of a sudden, it looked like it was a fun wedding until they took out the daggers and it turned into a red wedding, or in this case, maybe a blue wedding. So let me tell you what happened next. NBC News reporting, a shakeup is underway at the Democratic National Committee as several key longtime officials have lost their posts, exposing a still raw rift in the party and igniting anger among those in the progressive wing. Now, look, they're going to get rid of a bunch of Ellison and Bernie supporters. I'm going to tell you all about that. But the most important thing is why NBC News did not report that, but I will. Okay, but let me give you more details about what happened here. Complaints began immediately after party officials saw a list of Perez's appointments to DNC committees and his roster of 75 at-large members who are chosen by the chair. So he has a new list. He gets rid of a bunch of people in very important committees and gives in new people. Okay. The removal and demotion of a handful of veteran operatives stood out, as did what critics charge is the overrepresentation of Clinton-backed members on the Rules and Bylaws Committee, which helps set the terms for the party's presidential primary. Here we go. So when everybody was looking and there was a big interesting race going on, oh, kumbaya. Now people are not looking as much, and so now all of a sudden the Rules Committee gets to make the decisions on what the Unity Reform Commission suggests. So the way that they worked is, unity, we're gonna bring it together, but it's okay, we're gonna do reform. Now they're about to make their recommendations, they just had a meeting in Vegas, but their recommendations goes to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee now has nothing but Clinton supporters. So they could take those recommendations and go, oh, I'm so glad you helped us do that kabuki theater about unity. Look at these funny reforms. Yeah, no, we're not doing that. Okay, so let me tell you who got purged at these different committees and summit that were at large members. Ray Buckley, the New Hampshire Democratic chairman and longtime DNC official who ran against Perez for chair before backing Representative Keith Ellison. Buckley lost his spots on the executive committee and the DNC rules committee. Oh, you backed Ellison? Now we can't have you on the rules committee. They're going to make the decisions. Now, one of those decisions is really important. Again, NBC, great job in reporting this, but they don't have the next layer as to why. Okay, one of the decisions is then affects the executive committee. So the rules committee makes the decisions about what the rules are going to be. But it might turn out that the Unity Reform Commission suggests that the budget actually be seen by the executive committee. Now, this is unbelievable. If you don't know how the DNC works, and honestly, I didn't until recently, until after the election and we began to dive into this. It turns out that there's only two people who are allowed to see the entirety of the DNC budget. So you guys all give money and you know you think it's going to go to a good cause. And then Tom Perez, the chair, that's why they needed the chair. The chair can see the budget, the chair controls the budget, and the treasurer. And that's it, nobody else is allowed to see the budget. What, okay, now they might say, okay, hey, listen, man, we can't have the riffraff looking at our budget. I don't know that I agree with that, but at least there's some logic into, hey, wait, I don't want this to be public, okay? But at least some other folks should look at it at the DNC, right? Not, okay, I would argue all the DNC members, but they say, no, it can leak and we don't want it public, etc. But at least the executive committee, right? And right now the answer is no. So some folks on the Reform Commission are saying, let the executive committee see the budget. Why do they care about the budget? Because it's about the money, Lebowski. So the guys who are actually controlling the Democratic Party, when we say Clinton people, it's largely Democratic consultants. They're the ones making all the money. They're the ones that take your money, decide where it goes. And you're gonna be shocked to find out that a lot of it goes straight into their pockets. Gee, I wonder why they don't want anybody else to see the budget. So the Reform Commission suggested to the Rules Committee, the Rules Committee is now all Clinton people and it might kill it. But if it doesn't kill it and it passes it, and then all of a sudden Perez, the chair, has to show the budget and how the money is spent to the executive committee. Well, then I got to get rid of the people in the executive committee who are Ellison people. So all of a sudden, they're going to get purged. Ray Buckley, you ran for head of the whole organization. You've been part of this for 20 years. You're the chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, which is enormously important. Gone. Unity, my ass, you're gone. We can't have you people looking at the real numbers. James Zogby, the president of the Arab American Institute and prominent Sanders backer, is no longer co-chair of the Resolutions Committee and is also off the executive committee, a spot he has held since 2001. You've been there for decades, you've been there for the Democratic Party, but you made one mistake, you backed Bernie Sanders. Now the executive committee, if they're gonna look at the budget, we can't have anybody from Bernie's team looking at the budget, you're gone. It's gonna be fascinating to see what Keith Ellison does here. Because Keith Ellison will still be part of the executive committee because he's in the vice chair role, a role that they made up for him. So is he gonna say, oh, okay, I guess you took out all my guys, that's fine. Keith, when they came for James and they came for Ray and they came for all these other people, what did you do? So I don't know if he's going to play ball. I don't know. I have no idea. I didn't talk to him. I don't know. On the one hand, he could stay and he would have access to the budget, and maybe if there are issues, he could tell us. On the other hand, it doesn't look like anyone is left on those committees that the Clinton people don't trust. I can't believe the Clintons are still running the Democratic Party. She lost to Donald Trump and they still have a lock on it. Why? Because it's about the money. Okay, now more people who were taken out. Alistair Mann, the party's longtime former secretary and a vocal Ellison backer, who was removed from her large appointment to the DNC. She's gone. Barbara Casper Sipperstein, who supported Ellison and Buckley, was tossed from the executive committee. Man, lots of people leaving the executive committee. What a coincidence. Now, Alistair Mann says, it's quite unusual for a former party officer who's been serving on the DNC for forever to just be left out in the cold without even a call from the chairman. So I assumed it has something to do with myself support for Keith. So yeah, if all the people that were removed were Ellison and Sanders people and all the people who replaced them were Clinton backers, gee, I wonder if that had something to do with it. I can't quite tell. And what is the one thing that the DNC, the Democratic establishment, loves to do? They love to hide behind minorities. So they say, oh no, what are you talking about? We've got a black millennial transgender person and we got some other, and I got all this diversity, diversity, diversity. Wait, is there a diversity of opinions? I mean, if they're millennials, most of the millennials are Bernie Sanders supporters. Are they Bernie Sanders supporters? Well, no, but they're black, but they're transgender, etc. So which brings us back to Sipperstein. She made a good point. Sipperstein, the DNC's first transgender member, said, I can't speak for Tom, but you talk about diversity. I'm extremely diverse. Jewish, veteran, transgender, lesbian, grandparent, and small business owner. So maybe it wasn't really about diversity. Maybe they're actually hiding behind diversity because they don't want diversity of ideas. Unity only if you bow your head. And if you don't, there's a red wedding in your future. So all these folks got invited in to what seemed like was a unity event and come to find out that the Clintons send their regards. Well, I do have one last thing for them. The North remembers.
There's another side to this. Also, the DNC, I just read this yesterday, they're considering a resolution within the committee to get Angus King from Maine and Bernie Sanders, both independents, since they caucus with Democrats, to run as Democrats. Stop talking about this independent stuff. So part of it says, this should be resolved. The DNC recognizes the important contributions of the independent senators, these two. And the draft also says, they call on candidates and voters who share common goals and beliefs with Democrats to register or affiliate with the Democratic Party in 2017, 18, and beyond. So they can purge all of the people who support them within the committee, but then when they want them to run and have the heads and the faces, not have an I next to their name, but a D, so that they can continue to say, these diverse people that are behind them in voting blocks are with us. But within the committee, we don't really care what's actually happening with their values and the people that support
them. That's right. And another huge vote is coming, and that is on whether they're going to accept corporate cash or not. Progressives are saying, no, we should be uncorrupted. You want to guess what the Tom Perez Clinton wing thinks? You know what they think. So they got to get ready for those votes and they got to keep that money flowing in and then out the door to those consultants. We're going to run those TV ads. We're going to take their 15%. We're going to take your hard-earned money that you gave to the Democrats and run inefficient, terrible campaigns that lose the Republicans over and over again. But hey, at least their kids went to private school. I assure you that the North remembers. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. The mathematician writes, I bet my mother's triple mortgage Ellison plays ball jank. I have no idea. I don't know. Well, that's the great thing about politics and not a lot of great things. One of them is we get to find out, isn't it? Okay, London Water says they love to sell people false hope also. Damn Dempublicans. Just Democrats, that's the way to go. JusticeDemocrats.com/go. They're doing a new fundraising campaign. They're trying to hit 40,000 by the end of the week. They already got to 60% of that. Can I see 100%? JusticeDemocrats.com/go. All right, let's go over here. All right. So Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz had an interesting debate the other night. It was about taxes. The Republicans are planning to cut taxes up to the bone for rich folks and multinational corporations. That's a fact. In fact, I'll give you one very specific fact. 80% of the tax cuts that they proposed are going to go to the top 1%. And then Ted Cruz got those, oh, this is for farmers in the middle class. No, it's not. It's literally not. The Tax Policy Center says 80% of the cuts are not going to go to the top 20 or 10%. They're going to go to the top 1%. It's unbelievable. Anyway, so I was surprised to see this headline from Mediaite. Justin Barragona writes, watch Bernie Sanders get caught off guard by audience members' response in CNN debate. Man, oh, I was like, really? Did Bernie get caught flat-footed? He didn't know how to answer a tax question? So I'm now going to show you the clip where Bernie was caught off guard. Okay, prepare to be stunned at how Bernie was flat-footed on this. Of course not, watch this thing.
Senator Sanders, over my lifetime, all we've seen is more government and more expenses, cutting taxes from top to bottom or bottom to top, however you view it. Then we'll give some relief to the burdensome expenses all Americans face. Why would you not want a tax cut across the board for all Americans?
Well, I do want a tax cut for the middle class and working families. But when the top 0.1% now owns as much wealth as the bottom 90%, when you have a handful of people with incredible wealth and power, no, I'm afraid that I will not support tax breaks for billionaires. Now, I don't know if you were there when President Trump, were you there when President Trump came to Pennsylvania?
I was.
Yeah. And President Trump was touting, as I understand it, the repeal of the estate tax, something that Senator Cruz supports. That's why he was there, correct? Let's talk about the repeal of the estate tax. The only people who benefit from that are the top 0.2%. 99.8% of the people do not pay a nickel in estate taxes. Senator Cruz will tell you about all the farmers and the ranches. Well, Ted, there are 80 of them in the United States. The overwhelming majority of beneficiaries of this estate tax that Trump was supporting are people like the Walton family. Do you really believe that the wealthiest family in America should get a tax break of up to $50 billion, that the Koch brothers should get a tax break of up to $30 billion? Do you think that makes sense?
I did say all Americans.
Well, do you think that the wealthy should not get tax breaks?
I did say all Americans.
Okay, well, I happen not to believe that the Koch brothers need a tax break.
Oh my God, they got him. I didn't know they got him that bad. So yeah, so the guy disagrees and he thinks the Waltons, who by the way, it was their dad who created Walmart, not them. So they should receive another $50 billion in tax breaks. I read a stat last year that those six Waltons who inherited their money, what happened to bootstraps? Anyway, they inherited the money. And those six Waltons have more money than the bottom 50% of the country. That's over 150 million people. Six people have more. But they apparently need another $50 billion in taxes. The Koch brothers, this guy thinks, because he owns a trucking company, my guess is that he might be in the 0.2%. I don't know for sure. Or he thinks, like, I'm going to be in that 0.2%. Anyway, he thinks, no, the Koch brothers, they poor guys. They should probably get another $30 billion tax break. Okay, that's fine. God bless your heart, man. I don't think a lot of Americans agree. And they say, oh, Ted Cruz, of course, have to say, oh, it's going to help the economy. What, the Koch brothers are going to buy another yacht, another jet, and that's going to help the economy? Every dollar that goes and breaks to the poor and the middle class gets spent almost immediately and recirculates in the economy and creates a bigger and bigger growth in the economy. That's great. Dollars that go to the richest people in the country, almost all of it gets saved, which means that it does not recirculate in the economy and does not create growth or jobs. They've been lying to you this whole time with this trickle-down economic nonsense. And no, Bernie was not caught flat-footed or off guard. He had a great answer as usual. It's amazing how they twist things. All right, now let's go to a bit of a shocking story. There's two shocking stories. One's terrible. I'm going to save that to the end. The next one is shocking because of who I kind of agree with. Okay. Now, Donald Trump, as usual, with some angry tweets and mean tweets, and a lot of people couldn't figure out what the hell he's talking about, but I did, and I hope you're prepared to be shocked. I think that he might be right about some of it. Whoa. Okay, so let's explain. So here's his tweets. He says, uranium deal to Russia with Clinton help and Obama administration knowledge is the biggest story that fake media doesn't want to follow. He then says, quote, Russia sent millions to Clinton Foundation. And the third one is, workers of firm involved with the discredited and fake dossier take the fifth. Who paid for it? Russia, the FBI, or Dems, or all? So this is, as usual, sent at 4 in the morning. Does the guy ever sleep? I don't know, man. I'm worried about this guy. Of course, I'm worried about him in a thousand different ways. Anyway, so people have no idea what he said. What are you, uranium, Russia, the FBI, and the Democrats and the Russians working together in a collusion? What in the world are you talking about? So the reality is, The Hill actually had an excellent report, and at least the first two tweets of his are actually fairly accurate. So let me break it down for you. They explain in The Hill, before the Obama administration approved a controversial deal in 2010, giving Moscow control of a large swath of American uranium, the FBI had gathered substantial evidence that Russian nuclear industry officials were engaged in bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and money laundering designed to grow Vladimir Putin's atomic energy business inside the United States, according to government documents and interviews. Now, before I give you more of this, I want to run one more video for you of Trump. Again, it's not great at the English language, so as he's lashing out and attacking the Obama administration in such a convoluted way, he didn't make clear what the point of that was, which is this story, which is a really interesting story. So let me show you what Trump is saying and then explain what parts are actually true. Here, watch.
Uranium is a big subject. If the mainstream media would cover the uranium scandal and that Russia has 20% of our uranium, for whatever reason, and a lot of people understand what those reasons may be, I think that's your Russia story. That's your real Russia story. Not a story where they talk about collusion and there was none. It was a hoax. Your real Russia story is uranium and how they got all of that uranium, a vast percentage of what we have. That is, to me, one of the big stories of the decade, not just now, of the decade. The problem is that the mainstream media does not want to cover that story because that affects people that they protect. So they don't like covering that story. But the big story is uranium and how Russia got 20% of our uranium. And it, frankly, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. And it's a disgrace that the fake news won't cover it. It's so sad.
Okay, so it is true about the 20%, as I'm gonna show you from the story in The Hill. Oh, right, it's a story in The Hill, which is a mainstream news publication. So they did cover it. In fact, they're the ones who exposed it. And the New York Times had talked about it during the campaign. So what do you mean they don't cover it? The only reason you know about it is because they just covered it. So let me explain what that is, and I'll cover it for you. So they have more details on how the Russians got this and how portions of it were illegal. They also obtained an eyewitness account backed by documents indicating Russian nuclear officials had routed millions of dollars to the US designed to benefit former President Bill Clinton's charitable foundation during the time of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton served on a government body that provided a favorable decision to Moscow, sources told The Hill. These are sources inside the FBI. So of course Trump has some of this story wrong. If the FBI collaborated with the Russians and the Democrats, why are they telling you now about the Russians and the Democrats? So that part also makes no sense. But again, focus on the substance of the story because it is an important one and it is deeply concerning. The racketeering scheme was conducted with the consent of higher level officials in Russia who shared the proceeds from the kickbacks, one agent declared in an affidavit years later. So, by the way, a couple of things here. One is how this uranium got sold off and who got paid and kickbacks, etc. The other is why it was not prominently talked about while things were being approved. So we'll get to that as well. So more from the Hill. The first decision occurred, they're talking about two different decisions here that the Obama administration made. First decision occurred in October of 2010 when the State Department and the government agencies on the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States unanimously approved the partial sale of Canadian mining company Uranium One to the Russian nuclear giant Rosatom, giving Moscow control of more than 20% of America's uranium supply. So that's the 20% Trump's talking about, and that is true. They did do that, that's an absolute fact. Okay, now it could have been that they did that and it was perfectly legitimate and there was no bribes or kickbacks or anything along those lines or nothing untoward, but as the Hill is reporting, that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems like they might have gotten that through a lot of different methods, and some of which were not legal. So here's the second action the Obama administration took. In 2011, the administration gave approval for Rosatom's Tenex subsidiary to sell commercial uranium to US nuclear power plants in a partnership with the United States Enrichment Corporation. So look, some of this is benign, them selling them uranium to us, I don't think is a huge deal. You know, I'm open to being proven otherwise on that, but I don't think that's a big deal. But as the Hill explains, some of the deals, including the trucking of the uranium, could have been a national security issue. Okay, now, and the fact that they have 20% of our uranium, so that they could make, they could utilize that for a number of weapons. It's not like they don't have uranium from anywhere else. But again, it is clearly a potential national security issue. Okay. And an anonymous source tells the Hill, the Russians were compromising American contractors in the nuclear industry with kickbacks and extortion threats, all of which raised legitimate national security concerns, and none of that evidence got aired before the Obama administration made those decisions. Some details on the kickbacks. The first kickback payment recorded by the FBI through its informant was dated November 27th of 2009, the records show. That's important, because we know that they're doing kickbacks in 2009, but we approve those decisions in 2010 and 2011 afterwards. Okay, in evidentiary affidavits signed in 2014 and 2015, an Energy Department agent assigned to assist the FBI in cases testified that Mikurin, which is the main guy, main Russian involved here in this scheme, who was later arrested, supervised a quote racketeering scheme that involved extortion, bribery, money laundering, and kickbacks that were both directed by and provided benefit to more senior officials back in Russia. So there's serious wrongdoing going on here as well. And the Hill also reminds you, that's when conservative author Peter Schweizer in the New York Times documented how Bill Clinton collected hundreds of thousands of dollars in Russian speaking fees, and his charitable foundation collected millions in donations from parties interested in the deal, while Hillary Clinton presided on the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. At a bare minimum, that is the appearance of corruption. I mean, don't take millions of dollars to your foundation while Hillary Clinton is a huge part of the decision on whether we sell off 20% of our uranium to the Russians. That's a terrible idea. But the only thing that's worse than that is taking hundreds of thousands of dollars and putting it in your own pocket, not to a charitable foundation, but in your own pocket, Bill Clinton, while Hillary Clinton is helping to make that decision. Even if it's not corruption, and boy, it certainly looks like it, even if it's not, it certainly has the appearance of corruption. It makes people go, huh, I wonder if they did something wrong. Especially knowing that Hillary Clinton knew from the day that Obama got elected that she was going to run again. If you think you're going to run for president again, why would you do that? Because they can't help themselves. The money, the money, the money. Okay, so Trump unfortunately is right that that is a deeply concerning issue. Now, that doesn't mean that his third tweet was right about how the FBI and the Democrats and Russia are somehow in cahoots over the dossier. Now, what the hell is the dossier? That's the dossier that the Russians apparently or allegedly prepared with compromising information about Donald Trump. And some of that, the parts of that dossier have already been proven correct, others we don't know about. And so he takes the Uranium One story, which is true, and then says, and hence the dossier must not be true. No, that's not a hence at all. And there's a couple of Fusion GPS officials who were instrumental in ordering the production of that dossier who decided not to testify. Now that's curious in front of the House, in a private meeting in the House. That's interesting, and I think that's noteworthy, and we should look into that more. But that doesn't mean it has anything to do with the Uranium One deal. It doesn't mean it has anything to do with the Democrats. And remember, it's people in the FBI that are exposing all this either way. Now I'm going to suggest something to you that is both obvious to anyone else, but apparently not obvious to Donald Trump or the Democrats, or even most of cable news. Maybe the Russians wanted to work with the Clintons in case they won, but also wanted to have compromising materials and work with Trump in case he won. To which the rest of us go, of course they did. And by the way, have you noticed that Donald Trump has not authorized the sanctions on Russia? Now wait a minute, the House and the Senate voted overwhelmingly, 98-2 I think was the vote in the Senate, saying that the Russian sanctions should not be lifted. Why? Because Trump wanted to lift them. Since they were going to override his veto, Trump had to sign that into legislation. But has he actually continued to put those sanctions on Russia? Turns out the answer is no. So we go to Mother Jones. The White House is blown by an October 1st deadline for beginning to implement new sanctions targeting Russia, drawing concern in Congress that President Donald Trump is planning to ignore parts of a bill he grudgingly signed in August. Supposed to start on October 1st, Mother Jones wrote about that, I think on October 11th. Here we are 10 more days later roughly, and still hasn't imposed the sanctions. Wait a minute, you signed the bill, you're supposed to do it. The Treasury and State Departments also have not issued guidance on their plans for imposing the measure, as Senate aide said. They're not even planning to put the new sanctions in place. And Mother Jones reminds us that Trump opposed the new legislation, agreeing to sign it only after it became clear that Congress could override his veto, but he also issued a presidential signing statement suggesting he might ignore what he said were a number of clearly unconstitutional provisions in the legislation. In other words, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to pretend to do it, but here we are. It was supposed to be on October 1st, and many weeks later, he still hasn't put the sanctions on Russia. He never wanted to put the sanctions on Russia because he's working with Russia. I think that it is entirely possible that the Russians tried to influence both the Clintons and Trump in different ways. And I think that they had some success with the Clintons, unfortunately, under the Obama administration, or at least there's at least at a minimum the appearance of success on that. And with Trump, it seems like they have had spectacular success. And no matter how much Congress demanded those sanctions and Trump signed it, still nothing. Gee, I wonder if you're actually worried that what's in the dossier is quite true, and that the Russians have also have more information about you, and that's why you're not enforcing the sanctions. Okay, so who's guilty? The correct answer is both. Okay, now one last story for you guys. As usual, I go over. I thought I wasn't going to have enough today. Of course. Okay, anyway. Now this story is really sad. It's in a lot of ways heartbreaking, and it has a couple of twists and turns. So there is a flyer put up in a Cleveland State University that is devastating. So let me tell you about it. The flyer was posted last week on a billboard in CSU's main classroom building, according to Cleveland's Plain Dealer newspaper. It reportedly appeared the same day that the university's first LGBTQ center opened its doors. So. Now, I'm off the kids, and ear off the kids, because this is sensitive, terrible stuff, as you're kind of seeing on the graphic next to me, but let me show it to you in full. It talks about suicide in the LGBT community. It says 34% of trans people attempt suicide, 30% of suicides are LGBT related. Well, those are haunting stats, but they actually think that it's a good thing, and above a person hanging on a noose, it says, follow your fellow faggots. Wow. Man, there are some bad folks in this country. Okay. At the bottom of the poster, the words fascist solutions were printed. No individual or group has claimed responsibility. A similar flyer was spotted in Houston earlier this year. Obviously, I don't know who did it. If we did, you know, there might not be any consequences. So that's another interesting part of this story. They did take him down, but only because they said the university director of communications and media relations said, because proper posting procedure was not followed. The reason it was taken down is because of posting etiquette at the university. Well, it turns out that the leaders of the university might believe that it is protected speech. They said if the flyer had been put up following the correct protocol, it would not have been taken down, Doobie told the Plain Dealer. According to the legal framework related to free speech, it would have been allowed. Wow. Then we go to Cleveland University's president, Ronald Berkman. He said, while CSU was fully committed to campus community that respects all individuals, the school was also committed to upholding the First Amendment, even with regard to controversial issues where opinion is divided. Wait, is opinion really divided on whether gay people should hang themselves? And whether we should unite around fascists who encourage members of the LGBTQ community to commit suicide? Is Cleveland State University really divided on campus on that issue? So look, I am very much in favor of allowing conservatives, even the most obnoxious, hateful conservatives, to speak on college campuses. I fervently believe in the First Amendment. I think some of the hate speech laws sometimes on campuses or rules cross a line. And I think that a lot more speech should be allowed than some groups argue for. But at some point, you do get to hate speech, and it does get to intimidate some other people in the community. You know, the old rule about your rights end at the bridge of my nose. So now, they didn't actually hang any people, thank God. But when you encourage hangings, we're getting pretty close. So as courts and reports about the ACLU of Northern California, they explain that direct threats aren't protected by the First Amendment, but to count as a threat, speech has to incite imminent lawless action. Now, I don't know that this incites imminent lawless action, but boy, we're right on the edge there. And I don't know, they're a public university, and so they have to respect the First Amendment. It's not a private university, they can't set their own rules in that regard. So that is one enormous issue, and I think it's a really interesting one, and I think that if anything was to be classified as hate speech, this would be right up there, and I think there's a great case to be made for that. The other thing is that, we've gotten so divided that people are putting up posters like this in this country. Wow. And by the way, unsurprisingly, they actually got the numbers wrong. It's actually worse than they said. A 2014 study found that 46% of transgender men and 42% of transgender women in the United States had attempted suicide, compared with just 4.6% of the overall US population. In a 2011 study, 44% of bisexual youth reported thinking about suicide at least once in the previous 30 days. Man, those are stunning numbers and horrible, haunting numbers. And I think all decent people would want to change that. I was just on a panel the other night with as transgender activist. And for you animals out there who are right wing and think, oh, you know what, we should encourage them to hang themselves and they're not real people and they shouldn't have the same rights as us. I got news for you. Yes, they are fellow human beings. They are made of flesh and blood and they care and they have families, they have loved ones. To root for your fellow man to do that to themselves and to kill themselves. Man, that is a level of hatred that is hard to comprehend. But here we are in the year 2017 in the United States of America. I hope that the rest of us can unite to say that this is ugly and we need to fight against it and protect our fellow humans. shouldn't be too much to ask for. All right, guys. In the next hour, we got other folks coming in, including Brett and others who are going to talk to you about some interesting issues like France, the country of France, fining men. What are they fining them for? Something that used to happen all the time, but now is considered abhorrent. They'll tell you all about that. And new fun conspiracy theory to go much lighter about a body double for Melania. Interesting. Okay, and of course we've got a post game for you guys today as well. So tytnetwork.com/join, and you get the whole show plus the post game. And like I said, I'll be away tomorrow and in the second hour, but I'll be back next week. And don't miss the shows next week. Interesting, exciting announcements possibly. Let's see what happens. All right, see you soon.